Did perimenopause or menopause catch you off guard? Weird symptoms appearing from nowhere, wondering who is this person who's inhabiting your body? And most of all, having no one to talk to about it? It happened to me too. And with all the chaos that it was causing me, I knew I had to figure it out. I dug in, reading often outdated books and searching obscure references on the internet. I learned how our shifting reproductive hormones mess with every cell in our bodies. And as I realized how complete this hormonal disruption was, I became determined to help other women understand and control their own menopause journey. Because menopause matters. And here, we talk about all things menopause. I'm your host, Jean Andrus, and this is Menopause Matters, the podcast. Hello, everybody. This is Jean Andrus, and I am the menopause guru. And this is Menopause Matters, where we talk all things menopause. And I have with me today Diana Inch. And Diana is an adoption advocate and the owner and chief whatever, I'm not sure what you call yourself, at A Relative Peace, which is a business that works with people around the issues that come up around adoption. And Diana and I connected over our own adoption stories. And today we'd like to talk about how adoption affects us as women, somewhere in what they call the triad and beyond, the triad being birth mother, adoptive mother, or birth parents, adoptive parents, and adopted child. So Diana, tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into the work you do and what the work that you do really is.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Jean. I'm really excited to be here and talk about this important work. I will have one correction. I feel myself, I'm more of an adoptee advocate.
Okay.
So I'm really trying to advocate for adoptees and their needs.
And I said the word adoption, and that is not what I meant, because that's you and I both. We'll get there. We'll get to the politics of this in a few minutes, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all right. And I came by this work through my own experience as an adoptee. I was relinquished at birth and adopted at 4 months, had a lovely, regular, normal childhood, always knew that I was adopted and always felt that I would search for at least my birth mother one day because I just wanted to let her know I was all right. I felt that as a woman, I would want to know what happened to my child, and the unknown is oftentimes scarier, more problematic than knowing. So I wanted to let her know. And I tried to search on my own for years, didn't have access to information, grew up just something that is important for me, not having access to information and not knowing my background. And I knew I was mixed race, but I wasn't sure mixed with what or what mix. And that really limited my ability to explore like relationships, because I didn't want to hook up with a half brother unknowingly. And anyway, I had set the goal to find by the time I was 30, and I was able to do that only after I hired more people to get into it, into my file. I had to hire somebody only to find out that my birth mother had kept her records up to date, but the agency hadn't shared that with me when I had asked for my information. She had actually had a letter in there for me that they didn't give me.
Oh, that's... And now, what state were you, was your adoption in?
Washington State.
Washington yeah. State. I'm in the other Washington. Mine was in my original birth location was Washington, D.C., but I was adopted through Baltimore, and my revised birth certificate is in Maryland.
Okay.
So I had to go through the Maryland system to get my birth information. And does Washington State now have open records or not?
Not what I would consider true open records. If I wanted to get my original birth certificate, I would still have to go through and get a court order to get that.
So for those who are not involved in any way in this mess, when one is relinquished for adoption, your original birth certificate is sort of put on hold. And when you are adopted by a family, your original birth certificate, or your OBC, as it's known in the search world, is put away. It's marked that you cannot get it without legal complications, or except in a very few states. And your birth certificate is reissued. Now, it's reissued at whatever age you are adopted. So, for example, my husband was adopted by his stepfather. And mm-hmm. so his birth certificate was reissued, I believe, at age 8, which is just, it feels silly. But right. I know of people who have adopted young adults, 17, 18, often international adoptions. They're being adopted for reasons of helping to keep them in America, mm-hmm. In the U.S. And their birth certificates are reissued, which is like insane. Of course, mm-hmm. they may not have their original, but given where some of them are coming from, but it's what happens is that we lose that initial identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. That is huge for most of us. And so where were we on your story? I wanted to kind of get
you had asked where I
was. Yeah. Obviously, for those of you who've listened to me, our conversations get quite convoluted sometimes, and this one probably more than most, just because it's a mystery that most of us have to solve or feel like we need to solve to complete ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and in the United States, we have right now, each state is different. Alaska and Kansas never closed their records. They've always been open records states. And now there has been a movement that started in Oregon, which is where I am now in the big 90s, to have adult adoptees have access to their original birth certificates. And I was part of that first movement, and I still support that. And I think we'll be up to 16 states come this summer. I think Minnesota will join the open record states. And yeah, so it can be convoluted. and the struggle is real.
Yeah. So let me make another point here, because this is another point I hear all the time, and that is that, well, the children have a right to know. And yes, the children do, but we're not children. Mm-hmm. We're not, searching doesn't happen in 90%, 99% of the cases with pre-adult humans. It is only something that adults have access to, unless you have some weird medical issue or an open adoption that kind of failed itself, which is a whole different story and not one that we're likely to tackle today. But the people searching
the people who are out there searching are adults, and we don't need to be protected. And if we are the one being searched for, if it's our birth parent, we don't need to be protected from them either. We are adults. And the thing that makes me crazy sometimes is this whole attitude that we are somehow infantilized, I think is the way you say it. It's a word that trips me up frequently. But we are infantilized by this whole process because people think that we need to be protected or in some way are less capable of making these decisions on our own. And we are adults and we have a birthright, a true birthright to know who we are and how we got here. And also our health information, and health information has become increasingly important. My birth mother died of multiple sclerosis. When I first learned that, nobody thought there was a genetic component to multiple sclerosis, but they now know that there very much is to some forms of MS. Fortunately, does not appear to have come through into me, but nor any of my half sibs. But these are things that we need to know.
Yeah, that it's super helpful, and to have that background information. Growing up, I didn't know. Now that I have reunited with my birth mother, I have some more information, and she kind of keeps me in touch with what medical issues she is currently experiencing. And I wanted to say that one misconception sometimes about adoption and the children, always being children. I think you could do like infants to infinity or something. That's how we're sometimes treated.
ITI, infants to infinity and beyond.
Beyond and beyond, for sure. Is that, and you said this just perfectly, how the original birth certificate is put on hold. The birth parent, birth mother relinquishes those rights to have anything to do with the child. And they do not know whether the child gets adopted or not, unless it's an open adoption, which wasn't the case back in the 60s.
Yeah, the 50s,
Yeah, and so there, if I was not adopted, my original birth certificate would still be my legal document, would be my birth certificate. And so it's always a little bit troubling to me when they say, oh, the birth mother was promised confidentiality. My birth mother was told that I would have access to my records when I turned 18 and had been expecting me to find her and was getting very depressed that I hadn't found her and had, at 18, she thought, oh, she'll come look for me. At 21, she thought, oh, okay, maybe, And then it was sad because I didn't set my deadline until 30 because I didn't want to wait too long and have my birth parents be deceased. And she had actually thrown out cards that she had saved over the years. Like she would get a card each year for me. And so she had thrown those out a couple of years before thinking I wasn't going to find her. She had saved like one or two of her favorite cards. But she had been told that I would be able to, get my file and look her up. And that's just not the case.
Yeah.
And things are changing now with the DNA, access to DNA kits. And I really, part of what my work revolves around is to open up the conversation about, oh, well, what if you found out you had half siblings? Or what if your husband had a child by another woman when he was in high school or an affair, or, kind of open up the idea to that and and see how we can expand the concept of family to be more inclusive and not combative.
Yeah. I grew up in a family that my mother and father were unable to have children, naturally. This was in the 50s, so there weren't the alternatives that we have today. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that would have looked like in the 90s, whether, you know, they would have had the options for IVF or any of these other things. But my mother, the woman who raised me, and this is, language gets crazy around this too, mm-hmm. as we talk about mothers and moms. And I generally call my adoptive mother, mom, and my birth mother, either my mother or my birth mother, which when I'm talking, I actually have four half sibs with my birth mother on my birth mother's side. So it gets crazy because one of them will refer to her as mom and I will refer to her as my birth mother, as will my other adopted sister. So it gets crazy. For sure. I mean, it just, the relationships get weird. The fact that you have siblings that you didn't know about until, in my case, I met my half-brothers when I was in my 30s. I met one of my half-sisters when I was in my 60s. And another half-sister just can't cope with any of it. So she's not even in the picture. But it gets crazy. And for me, I lost both of my birth parents before I had an opportunity to meet them. I found my birth mother's side of the family when I was in my 30s, but she had passed of MS shortly after my son was born. When talking about infantilization, the woman who did the search for me, who came from the agency I was adopted through and actually was the woman who had worked with my parents to adopt me, said she wouldn't search for my birth father because she believed that my birth mother had made him up. Every detail, when I finally found him, every detail in my non-identifying information was correct. But I got this. No, you don't need to know that. But my mother, the woman who raised me, was very angry that I went searching because she felt like whoever is someone who could give up a child was somehow less than human, less than a woman. She had no empathy whatsoever for my birth mother and her plight, which now that I live in the deep South and can see, you know, how people react to women who are pregnant and not wishing to keep their child, I can see, you know, the world that she grew up in, because she was Southern and it was very much, there was a lot of judgment from her. And so for me, finding was not an option until I was in my 30s. Yeah. I had actually tried once when just before my son was born, but it was very difficult to do that when I wasn't living where I had been adopted and didn't have any information and was 8 months pregnant with a very, very big kid.
Sure. That's understandable.
So, I didn't find her. And it wasn't until a few years later when my brothers, the brother that I was raised with, his birth mother, who was not mine, found him. So yes, tangled relationships all over the place.
Yes. Yeah. In contrast to yours, my parents, and those are my adoptive parents, I call them my parents, they had two biological sons. and then had some miscarriages and chose adoption as a way to fill out their family. And they adopted me. And then a couple years later, they adopted my sister, not related by by blood. Parents were white. I was mixed. It turns out I'm white and black, and which was suitable because I always considered myself very gray.
Yes.
You know, I grew up gray. It was like, oh, you could be related to, you know, you could be family. My sister's African-American. And so I think, you know, still to this day, families sometimes keep adoption secret from the children, which I think is just nuts. I'm a librarian, and that is partially because of my adoption, but I have to highly recommend this book by Jamie Kern Lima, Worthy, yeah. How to Believe You Are Enough and Transform Your Life. She was an adoptee, and she didn't find out until she was 27 or 28.
Did she find out through DNA or not?
No. She was planning her wedding, and she had gone over to get photos from her dad or mom's place. And there was a date on the back of one photo that was wrong for her. And so when she asked her mother, you know, was this date wrong? It seemed wrong. And her mother confessed to her being adopted, and that her dad, when her mom and dad adopted her, didn't want her to know. And so the mom had always kept that secret until confronted. And anyway, she writes about it in chapter two of her book, her first book, Believe It, but there's reference to Worthy. Mm-hmm. And I think many adoptees struggle with feelings of worthiness or unworthiness or not being wanted. And that is also part of the work that I'm doing. I really feel
it's
compelled
huge.
To help people.
You know,
yes.
As an entrepreneur, as a person running a business, I have connections with hundreds of entrepreneurs that I talk to on a regular basis, and probably thousands more. But I think when we say as adoptees that rejection and this feeling of unworthiness is our primal wound, and how big that is for us and how big it is as we walk into this. Yeah. And the book was written about adoptees, but it was, like many other things in our culture, was co-opted by everyone who has a, quote, primal wound. And there is a belief, I think, that many, many entrepreneurs and others have this sense of unworthiness, of fear of rejection, and they kind of don't get the depth that adoptees feel. Because this, especially those of, well, I can't say that. For those of us who are not part of our family of origin, the biggest event of our lives as children is this ejection from our family of origin, whether we remember it or not. This knowledge that we are not part of whoever raised us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess when I come to a lot of the menopausal stuff and working with a lot of menopausal women, our traumas come back. It's a big time. I was talking with one of my friends who's into human design, and we were talking about planetary returns. And there's like big planetary returns. There's little ones all through our lives, Mercury and Venus. And a planetary return is when the planets are in the same spot in your chart as they were when you were born. So the big ones, Saturn and Jupiter and Venus, Saturn and Jupiter and Uranus and Pluto, because their orbits are so big and they take so long to come back to the same point, the planetary returns are all 45, 50, 60, and several. They're late in life. And these are big, huge cataclysmic events in your astrological chart, if you follow this sort of thing. And it's Mercury retrograde, so the whole recording is probably going to be messed up anyway. But what we find, I think, is that we get here and things that we thought we were done with come back. And I think adoption and the circumstances surrounding our adoptions and who we are at the root comes back hugely.
Yes. Yeah. And what is interesting is oftentimes we're not aware of how it affected our lives. And sometimes there's a term like coming out of the fog. Not everybody can, you know, has to be in the fog, but it's a term that is often used for adoptees who, I have been a people pleaser all of my life, and I think adoption has a big role to play in that, because you're adopted into a family to fulfill a role and to fill a hole, in this case, you know, with the miscarriages of my parents. You know, they didn't want a football team. That's what mom said. They didn't want a football team. So they wanted to adopt girls. And I think being mixed race and then, you know, children of color, we were just easier to get, not as high in demand as the healthy white babies.
I was that healthy white baby.
Yeah. You must have cost more than I did. I always consider myself a blue light special or something. And I will also say that my parents, and I think this might be because they had biological children of their own, they supported me in my need to search, where your mother felt betrayal or yeah. something. Mine were always supportive of that. And they have been wonderful. Like my dad, my adoptive dad, and my stepdad have passed. I have not been able to connect with my biological father yet. Although I do have a half sister who's 7 months older than I am. And I was going to say also how your information was correct in your file, but they didn't share that or didn't pursue it. They wrote it off. Didn't believe it. My biological parents were engaged to be married. My birth mother shared that information on my birth certificate, but they left it blank for the biological father information, even though she gave it to them. And as far as medical information and my non-identifying information, I knew that both my parents had good teeth. That was that was kind of the extent of it. I wanted to read a little passage if I could find it, but go ahead and talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. So yeah, this is kind of the things that happen for us, is that we as adoptees, we are looking to find how we fit into a world where we don't look like anyone we know. And I think for me, the thing that drove that home was seeing my son when he was born was the first time I had ever seen anyone who looked like me.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, seeing him. And he, I have to say, he is completely his father's child in that I have a picture of the forge of him, his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather. And they're like clones of one another. But there were hints of me in his face. And that was the mm-hmm. first time I'd seen that. And then when he was about 12, when I found my birth mother's family, mm-hmm. and I was sharing with my half brother, I went to visit him in Denver where he lived. And we had a whole bunch of pictures. I had pictures of me as a child. He had pictures uh-huh. of our birth, of our mother. And there was a picture of her from her high school. It was her high school graduation photo. It was a mm-hmm. beautiful picture. And it was laying down, and there was another picture on top of it that was sideways to it. So it mm-hmm. it cut her off. The top part was not there, but the bottom part was. No, other way around. Eyes, just eyes. And I glanced down and I said, what picture of me is that? That was what was going through my head. And
yeah.
it was the first time I had ever really, really seen someone who looked like me. Our hands are identical.
Mm.
And, you know, and even to that, I mean, my brothers are kind of their father's children, so they don't look as much like me. I think my younger sister might look a lot like me, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But she won't meet me. My other half-sister takes after her birth father, who was in a lot of facial ways, but she has a lot of the body type that comes from us, which is just, it's just so weird how all of these pieces fall together and how it starts to make a pattern that you can see and can feel and mm-hmm. really starts bringing you back into who and what you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. With children, like, I think there are many adoptees who they want that biological connection and they want to have somebody who looks like them. I was terrified of having children because I didn't know all of that. And again, I didn't date until I met my birth mother. And so I was 30 at that time. And so I know there are adoptees that don't want children. And then there are adopted people who just want to have that biological connection. And then for many adoptees, I think that can be a trigger, having that kid and having that little baby and thinking, how could my biological mother have given me up because I have such love for this child? Yeah. And it kind of opens up things. So it is an ongoing.
There are wounds that happen over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so interestingly enough, I mean, my the other half of my search was finding my birth father's family. Mm-hmm. And that has been quite instructive as well. Again, I have a number of siblings on that side, and they are less open to what, you know, my existence. And most of whom I connected with have been cousins on that side, my birth father's cousins and their children. So yeah, that's been kind of fascinating as well. But I think there's a lot to be said for this searching for identity. And I think that's the bigger lesson, is that as adoptees, we have a bigger search, a more defined search, if you might call it that. But I think for most women, we are at this point in our lives where we're saying, who am I? Mm-hmm. And what is it? What, who am I going to be going forward? And the cool thing is, adopted or not, you get to choose that. You get to choose what pieces of you you're going to take forward and what pieces of you you're done with.
Yeah, that's so appropriate for what I've just been working on and the business that I'm pursuing and coming into my own and finding how to use my voice and to help others. And I was born in 1966, so I'm a fire horse and I'm a couple of years away from that, but I fully expect to be in my full power in a couple more years. I always figure I'm three quarters horse because I'm a fire horse and a Sagittarian.
Yeah, I'm a wood goat and a Capricorn or wood sheep.
Oh, so you're kind of goaty sheepy.
I'm goaty sheepy.
Goaty sheepy, yeah. I was going to say that through DNA, so I found my birth mother when I was 30, and because my biological father didn't show up for their wedding, and because I was, you know, he was African American, they met at the Air Force Base, it did not turn into be the officer and a gentleman scenario of Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. But she made the plan because her parents, she did not feel that they would accept me. And although she lived on her own in Seattle when she was 20 years old, she didn't feel like she could provide for me in the way that she wanted, and didn't feel that she had the support that she would need to do that. And that's why she made the plan to relinquish me. And although she had all of his information, she had a cleansing ceremony in which all the photos and everything had been burned. So she didn't have any of that information. And we had to wait until I got a DNA match in my, I think, 50s that connected me first with a first cousin through one of the DNA sites. And then a year or so later, with a different one, I connected with the half-sister. And she has a full brother. And we know about two other half-brothers from, you know, a different relationship. But I actually got to meet my half-sister. And she's lovely. And we need to get together again. The pandemic kind of put a...
Yeah, that kind of...
Hold on.
Yeah, that kind of made reunions weird. I actually, my granddaughter was born during the pandemic. And because I wasn't going to wait until the pandemic was over to meet her. And they live in New Hampshire. I live in Louisiana. We drove up, camped the entire way up and did not talk to anybody. We had all our own food. We washed our hands before we gassed up. We, you know, the whole thing, and spent time with my granddaughter. And then on the way back, I met two of my birth father's cousins, and we had dinner with them, and they were super fabulous. And I am in touch with them. It's a fascinating journey. I think we need to kind of wrap this up. We've gone a little bit long. This is a topic that I could talk about, you know, the second topic I could talk about all day, the first being menopause. But I think what I want to wrap up with, because this is a political hot topic right now, and we're going to see more and more and more of it in the news as people trying to justify the idea that if a woman can't choose, she can always put her baby up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just emphasize that that's two different choices.
Mm-hmm.
There's the choice to have a baby, and there's the choice to relinquish that baby. Two different choices, and they must both be preserved so that she can thrive, the baby can thrive, and the world does not need more damaged children. And adoption is, by definition, a damaging process. It destroys a family. And yeah. So as we go through this, I'd like to offer the idea that we need to be careful about adoption. Adoption sometimes has to happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the right thing to do. My husband was adopted by his stepfather versus by, you know, a stranger adoption. Diana and I were both adopted by strangers. We moved into a family that was not who perhaps we were designed to be. And so as we go through the next couple of years, we're going to see a lot more of this. We're going to see a lot more foster children. We're going to see a lot more. We're going to see orphanages again. Back 1930s orphanages, children being raised in institutions. And I want to leave you today with the idea that women need to be trusted with their own choices. Babies can't be for sale. Diana, you want to add anything?
Yes, if I may.
Yes.
I have a bit of a different twist on the choices where you can choose to be pregnant. You can choose to parent. That's how I look at it. Like, some people don't want to be pregnant. Some people don't want to parent. And adoptees, I know adoptees that wish they had not been adopted. I know foster kids that desperately wish they had been adopted. And part of what my work is, I really, in addition to destigmatizing the adoption constellation, is to bring more accountability and transparency to the adoption industry so that many of those practices of selling babies, rehoming failed adoptions to people, which is basically child trafficking, that we can improve those adoptions that truly need to happen and make sure that the child's best interests are being met, and follow up and having those things. Because in the past, the system is flawed, deeply flawed. Yes,
deeply.
Yeah.
Diana, thank you for joining me. I will likely put a trigger warning on this episode because I think it is very difficult sometimes for adoptees to hear the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so those of you who are in an adoption, have been adopted, are dealing with the aftermath, with how that's changed who you are in the world. Diana, how can someone get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, thanks, Sean. Will there be show notes?
Oh, yes, there will be show notes.
I can put show notes, but a relative piece at gmail.com is my current email.
Okay.
That I'm working through, and that's ARELATIVE.
It is in the show.
A-C-E.
Yes, not P-I-C-E.
You're right. at gmail.com. And yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity and for bringing awareness, because I think not only does it help the adoptees, I hope also that those biological parents and those adoptive parents will rally around to support the adoptees in whatever manner that might be, that maybe the adoptee does need medical information for their child or themselves, and where the biological family might have been keeping that secret. Let's just start releasing that and bringing it out into the light. I know today's the eclipse.
We're recording on the eclipse, and there is a lot in this particular eclipse that is about reclaiming oneself, and that's that's sort of a theme here, and I hope that this helps us to understand. And if adoption isn't where you're coming from, feel free to take from this conversation what you can. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'll see you next time on Menopause Matters. Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please submit a rating and review and share it with a friend. Menopause has many annoying symptoms, but not many are worse than the lack of sleep. If you are one of the 90% of women who suffer from menopausal insomnia and or fatigue, I'd love to offer you my free download, 5 Tips to Get Better Sleep Tonight. You can get it at menopausematterspodcast.com/sleep. And let me know which of these tips works best for you.